You are listening to Amplify Your Success Podcast, episode 15. And if you have ever struggled with difficult feelings, maybe you got disappointed, you had a failure and you beat yourself up, maybe you've been comparing yourself to someone else, today my guest and I are talking about how to really use those feelings in a more powerful way and have huge breakthroughs that can help you ultimately become more successful.
Welcome to the Amplify Your Success Podcast. Hey, are you a thought leader, creative entrepreneur, or change maker and want to magnify your impact, boost influence while creating a financial abundance? Stay tuned for today's inspiring episode with your host, Melanie Benson.
Hey, it's Melanie here, and I'm so excited for today. I have just this most extraordinary guest joining us for Amplify Your Success. Her name's Dr. Joan Rosenberg, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Joan and how I know her and why I knew I had to bring her on to have this conversation with, which I think is a very powerful conversation, about difficult feelings. So Dr. Joan is a best-selling author of the book Ease Your Anxiety. She's a media host, a master clinician, a consultant, and a cutting-edge psychologist known as an innovative thinker, acclaimed speaker, and trainer. Recently, she did a TEDx talk called The Gifted Wisdom of Unpleasant Feelings, and it was a smash hit. And recently, she brought that same conversation to the Association of Transformational Leaders, where we're both members. And I got to tell you, it really created a huge buzz in the room. And it really opened up a conversation about something that many of us just want to push away and make it go away as fast as we can. And Joan's really got a different perspective on how there's a gift in difficult feelings. So Joan, thanks so much for joining me and having this conversation today. Because I personally feel like, you know, thought leaders, visionaries, change agents, you know, we're constantly pushing the edge of what's possible. And it really does bring up a lot of difficult feelings. There's fear, there's shame, there's, okay, who am I to do this? You know, we're really like getting into a lot of uncharted territory when we go after these big, bold visions. So I think this is going to be an awesome conversation today.
Well, I'm all in, and please know how grateful I am that you kind of caught the vision and that you invited me to do this. So
yes,
I'm quite grateful.
We're running with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's make this a bigger conversation, right? Like I think oftentimes people are taught in the world of success, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. You know, there's so many cliche quotes out there and memes about like, just push through your resistance. But I feel like you have a slightly different message that's actually a bit more powerful. And I'd love for you to share what this idea of gifted wisdom or the gifted wisdom of an unpleasant feeling is.
Well, I agree with you. I think most people want to back away from unpleasant feelings. And it's like, And I don't know that people fully understand why they want to do it. It feels uncomfortable. It feels unpleasant to them. But I don't even think that they really get why they want to push away from it, nor do they really get the benefits of staying with it. So if I go to the gifts right off the bat, when somebody stays with what's unpleasant to them, and notice also language, because that's really key to me. So it's not that feelings are bad or feelings are negative when we don't like them. They're simply unpleasant or uncomfortable or unsettling or something like that. But I would rather people not see them as bad or negative. So that's the first thing. Second thing is that in terms of the gifts that come, when we stay present, when we allow ourselves to experience and move through the unpleasant feelings, in the immediate moment, we actually feel calmer and have greater inner peace. And over a long period of time, we actually gain insights. I don't think that we push away those unpleasant feelings, what ends up happening is we actually don't get the benefit of the insights that come when we stay with the feeling. We move through it. And then over the long term, I mean, oh my God, the benefits are enormous. You gain self-confidence, your self-esteem increases, anxiety is reduced, and you can let go of your old life stories. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on from there.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but I personally have felt so much anxiety over the years, right? Like, I'm not one of those naturally confident leaders or someone who, you know, got into entrepreneurship with just this you know, ongoing source of excitement and inspiration. Like, I really have faced a lot of mental demons and challenges. And, you know, I, like many people, I have compared my own journey to others and, you know, got left feeling really low about my own, you know, progress. And, you know, I think this is a huge epidemic. And I think one of the things, at least in my experience, and I've seen a lot of research out about this, is that oftentimes it leads to real paralysis. It leads to, you know, pervasive anxieties that keep people from actually stepping into their brilliance. And, you know, I actually think it leads to depression. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I agree with what you've said. The one piece I don't agree with is that, well, at least on my end, I know you to be a very respected thought leader and facilitator. So let's get that out on the table first. So whatever personal doubts you may have experienced or anxieties, that was never reflected in how I, or I think many others, experienced you. So let's get that one out on the table first. The second is that what's interesting about the way you asked the question is for me to actually, again, I said language is really important. So it's actually to clarify the distinction in my mind between a thought and a feeling.
Yes. Great.
Okay. So when somebody starts to compare themselves to others, that's a thought. When somebody says, am I worthwhile? That's a thought. When somebody says, I feel worthless, or I feel like a failure, or uses any kind of an evaluative statement, it's a judgment and it's a thought. It's actually not a feeling. So if I look at somebody going, well, I don't feel deserving. Well, guess what? That's a thought. That's not a feeling. And the way I think through this is that all those kinds of judgmental, self-evaluative thoughts actually distract from the unpleasant feeling underneath. And instead, I would much prefer that people go, oh, I feel vulnerable. And that would probably be the most accurate statement. And again, translated in my mind, that means, oh, I could get hurt or I might learn something. So vulnerability in my mind is I'm opening myself. I'm open and willing to get hurt or to learn something.
Well said. And I want to have two things to respond with that. First one is, thank you for reflecting that back, that it doesn't come across. And, you know, I actually do a lot of work to move through those feelings, recognize them and move through. But I did spend a lot of years trying to push them away. And I have learned the difference in a very painful way. But the second part of this is, you know, I love this distinction between a thought and a feeling. And I would love to know what some of these feelings are, these difficult or challenging feelings are that people might need to learn the difference. You brought up vulnerability as one, but what are some of the other ones?
My invitation is for people to experience really 8 feelings. And why these 8? Because, again, in my experience, these 8 are the most common feeling results of things not turning out the way you want. Mm-hmm. So it would be sadness, shame, helplessness, anger, vulnerability we've mentioned, embarrassment, disappointment, and frustration.
Mm.
That's it. Those 8.
And fear's not on that list. Why is
you
that?
You bet fear's not on that list. So important distinctions, fear nor anxiety are on that list. And
right.
So, and I think people mistakenly use the word fear. It's so commonly used, but it's so misused. Fear, if we look at the way psychology defines it, fear is I'm experiencing danger in the moment right now. Most of us are not in fear because they're the tiger and the leopard and the lion are not chasing us down and growling at our heels, and or the mother bear is not about to bite us, right? So we're actually not in fear. The more appropriate word, and I'll challenge this word too, is actually anxiety, because anxiety is a diffuse apprehension of the future. So, something bad's going to go on sometime in the future. And so most people use fear in place of the word anxiety, which would be the more appropriate word to use. And I want people to have fear, because if they're in real danger, I want them to have the reaction that's appropriate, which is typically what people describe as that fight, flight, freeze, or faint response. So that I'm going to run away, or I'm going to engage in a fight to enhance my survival. So I want fear when fear is appropriate to be experienced. Otherwise, let's change the language. Let's use the more appropriate word of anxiety, but then I'm going to dismiss anxiety too. So,
right.
Because by and large, I think that when people use the word anxiety, they're one, either feeling vulnerable. Again, I'm going to go do a public speech. I'm afraid of what people will think about it. They might ridicule me. I'm going to do a new webinar. I'm going to, you know, go do a live event, things I've never done before. Or I'm going to go do a consultation and I want to be well received. So I'm actually feeling vulnerable because why? I could get hurt. I could make mistakes. People could not like it. And so the more accurate word I think is feeling vulnerable, or anxiety, I think by and large is a cover for those 8 unpleasant feelings.
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, anxiety is a more acceptable, I guess, thought to have, right?
Like, yes, absolutely.
And yet if we own that we're vulnerable or we feel embarrassed or shameful, those are maybe not as acceptable for many people to believe they can feel. And so I can even see in my own journey where I tried to not let myself feel vulnerable or not put the shame out there, you know, because I've had journeys where like I was so like, oh my God, why did I do that? Or, you know, how did I get in this space? And yet the anxiety was somehow more comfortable to let myself be in.
I think that's really interesting. Right. And yes, absolutely. I think it's much easier for somebody to use that word and to have it be socially acceptable. People don't like to be aware of vulnerability, nor do they like to talk about it. Yeah. Yet the truth is that we're all vulnerable all of the time. And again, there's distinctions to be made there, because I think that there's something I call non-conscious vulnerability, which has to do with we're all vulnerable all the time. You know, an accident could happen. Somebody that we love could get hurt. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. Earthquake, a fire, flood, I mean, you name it. Any of those possibilities exist. So at that level, we're all vulnerable. And yet at the same time, we choose into vulnerability when we want to expand who we are. When we want to become more than who we are right now, then we're actually choosing vulnerability. And that's a whole different experience.
Right, right. I get that. You know, I want to go a little bit deeper into vulnerability, because sure. I feel like there's a gift for many of us in embracing vulnerability and really understanding the value it brings to us.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe we could talk a little bit more, especially like imagining that a thought leader, someone who's stepping courageously into the vision or into their purpose, and they are confronted with so many mixed emotions and feelings about where they're going with this, right?
Right.
How can vulnerability serve you in that space?
Well, again, my belief about vulnerability is, I can't even get the words out. My belief, so let me embarrass myself here. My belief about vulnerability is that when we choose into vulnerability, or we choose vulnerability, we are at our greatest strength as human beings. And when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, again, the notion is that you're open and willing to be hurt or to learn, and or to learn, that not only are we at our greatest strength, but that the action taking, whether it's speaking up or literally taking a physical action, whatever it might be, publishing a blog, that's a literal taking an action, right? That's the very thing that allows us to develop confidence. So confidence is, we experience confidence and develop confidence through speaking or taking action. Those are the two major ways we do it. So we have to be vulnerable, choose that, or get pushed into it, ultimately, in order to be able to actually experience the confidence we want. to experience. So that's one critical thing. The other is that for people to be able to choose into that vulnerability, it takes being able to experience and move through those other seven feelings that I named. So we actually can be vulnerable when we see ourselves as being able to handle or experience and move through those other seven feelings.
I love that allowing ourselves to feel vulnerable is one of the ways to get to confidence. And so it's almost like something we could choose actively to allow ourselves to be more vulnerable, to build more confidence. And I think there's also something that a lot of people don't understand is when we show up in vulnerability and we show up and people think vulnerability is a weakness, but it's not. It's actually humanizing. And I think in today's space of, you know, really many of us are inspired to transform what leadership is about. Having, you know, the ability to be vulnerable and make that okay, guess how inspiring that is to other people. It's like, oh, okay, good. We all get to be human together. I just feel like it could become a new fad.
A new fad that turns into a permanent trend.
Exactly.
That's what I'm voting for. So yeah.
Right. I'll vote for that too. Let's hold that one. But I also want to talk a little bit more about shame and embarrassment.
Okay.
And I know they are different things. So I believe that many people who are big risk takers in our space and in the entrepreneurial world, and who are creating change and kind of bouncing up against what they believe is possible, when things fail, it triggers deep shame and embarrassment, and sometimes differently for different people. How could we let, you know, shame and embarrassment be a guide for us?
Not let it own you. As a colleague of mine likes to say, it's have the condition, but don't let the condition have you.
Say that again. I want to make sure we really capture that. That was
Mary Morrissey. Yes. loves to say. It's her quote. It's like, you can have the condition, just don't let the condition have you. And if one watches my TED talk or understands my work, the essence of it, the core piece is that is around this gifted wisdom of unpleasant feelings. So it's important for people to understand that when one experiences a feeling, the amount of time it actually courses through you is roughly 90 seconds. And that it's not that we don't want to experience unpleasant feelings. I frankly believe we want to experience the whole range of what we feel. But what ends up happening is when a feeling fires off in our body, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, we experience kind of a biochemical rush of kind of neurohormones coursing through our bloodstream. So you can think of that as kind of a biochemical rush. And it dissipates out of the bloodstream. And before it does that, it activates bodily sensations. And then it dissipates out of the bloodstream. And so you can think of it kind of as a biochemical rush and then a biochemical flush. But what ends up happening is that we actually come to know what we're feeling emotionally by the bodily sensation that got activated when the feeling first fired off. And so my whole pitch here, if you will, the thing that I really want people to understand is that that it's the bodily sensation that lets us know what we're feeling is that the thing that we don't want to feel, and that it's only going to last roughly 60 to 90 seconds. So when someone starts to experience shame or someone starts to experience embarrassment, know it's short-lived. And embarrassment probably more so than shame, because I think what ends up happening at times is that people start to then get into more self-judgment once they start to experience the feeling, the unpleasantness of the feeling. So now I'm embarrassed. Oh, well, now I get into a bunch of thoughts that go, oh God, that was so stupid. Or people are going to really not, you know, they're going to see me not in a positive light, or they're going to laugh at what I did, or We just go on and on with those kinds of thoughts. And every time we loop into that thought, we're firing off the same feeling again. And whether it's an embarrassed feeling or a shameful feeling. And if we stop firing that off and go, oh, you know what? It happened in a vulnerable moment. People are probably not going to remember it 10 years later from now. You know, it's like we can use some other mental strategies to go, all right, what can I learn from this? I'm going to drop it and then I'm going to move on.
So what I'm hearing in all of this is that the feeling itself gives us some information. And part of the information is to recognize that this is just a moment in time, right? And where the real opportunity is to not let these more challenging emotions become our identity.
Become our identity or become self-evaluative, harsh self-criticism.
Right.
I don't want it to, it's having it not move into that direction.
Yes.
It's let the feeling just be the feeling.
Right.
Oh, I mean,
you don't have to make it mean anything. It
right.
just means right. this happened and now we can move through it and beyond it.
Exactly. It would be more like, oh, ooh, I know I was ashamed of that or I'm embarrassed about that. Whoa, wait, what can I learn from that? And then move on.
Yes. Okay. So I would imagine, because this question is forming for me right now, I imagine that as a listener, they might be thinking this too, is, do we have to, is part of this process, I guess is a better way to say it, to claim it out loud? Or is it something we can do internally or both? Like what's the guidance in terms of really honoring those unpleasant feelings?
Well, I think the most important thing is the self-awareness.
Okay.
So does it have to be spoken outwardly when it involves other people and there's some kind of repair that needs to take place? Then I think it would be important to then raise it more publicly. But if it's something that you're wrestling with alone, then just let yourself experience it and go for the learning. Don't go for repetition of the feeling and don't go for repetition of the thought. Go for what you can learn from the experience.
Right.
And put your energies there.
Got it.
There's a tendency, Melanie, for people to both overvalue thinking and to also overvalue feeling. And the goal here is not to do either. It's to understand that feelings and thoughts, they're sources of information. So let's not overvalue them. We need both. But let's not turn something that was an unpleasant feeling into a harsh self-critical attack. Nor let's let our thoughts get away. You know, so we don't want things either one to get away from us.
Yeah. So I know a lot of my clients over the years have kind of gotten lost in the depth of the beating up, right? The self-judgment. And mm-hmm. it's almost like they go into this negative spiral vortex, you know, or sometimes I've called it the deep dark well.
Yep. Yep.
What advice would you have for someone who maybe has let the feelings of these judgments take them into a really pervasively negative space?
I think of harsh self-criticism, negative self-talk, negative self-evaluation, any way you want to describe it, as a distractor from unpleasant feelings. So I think of it as a thought hijack.
A thought hijack? Is that what you said?
A thought hijack.
Okay.
Of emotional feeling. Mm-hmm. And so my thing would be to, if somebody's in that deep dark well, then stop and think about, first of all, stop and notice what kinds of thoughts you're thinking about yourself. Then go, what unpleasant feeling or feelings might be underneath this? What's it linked to? Kind of what happened and what can I learn from this? So you can ask us kind of a sequence of questions. And then going forward, it's understanding that anytime you shift into that harsh self-criticism, you're distracting from unpleasant feeling. Mm. And my hunch is more times than not, it's going to be embarrassment or it's going to be vulnerability.
Yeah. And I wonder because, you know, in my work, I oftentimes see that we let ourselves get hijacked as a way of playing it safe. Because when we're caught up in those deep, dark unpleasant feelings, and we've let them take us into paralysis or,
yep,
you know, non-action. It's actually a very sophisticated way that our subconscious mind keeps us from actually doing the thing that we feel inspired to do.
And you nailed it.
Yeah.
You just nailed it. Yes, you totally nailed it. I think harsh self-criticism is one of the most insidious, elegant ways we hurt ourselves. Yes, nailed it.
I just got full body chills because I know I've done that. I know many of my clients have done that. And, you know, the simplicity of what you're sharing with me and our, and you know, all of our Amplify Success community here is that we don't have to be taken hostage by these insidious, you know, thoughts that take us, you know, out of the game, but we can notice them. We can become aware of them, and we can check in for the learning. Like, what could I do differently or better? What do I need to do to clean this up right now? What could I do, you know, in this moment to really maybe even, you know, honor my journey and that I'm a human being that gets to do this stuff, right?
Right, right, right. Again, it's coming back to like more times than not, my hunch is it's going to come back to vulnerability. Mm. Then it's give yourself permission to get hurt.
Yes.
because there's two things here too. It's like, and it's not only getting hurt, but it's like the tendency is that we also default to anticipating a negative outcome. We never default to anticipating a positive outcome. So be fair to yourself. You can get hurt and you can also have an awesome success. So it can turn out way better than you ever could have even imagined. And more possibilities might come from that. So be fair to yourself in that regard as well. It's like choose into taking the risk. Because again, the worst outcome, so choosing into taking the risk means choosing vulnerability. And then it's choosing the risk time after time after time. And then it's understanding, it's going into it with the understanding that if you choose into the risk, the worst possible feeling outcomes are the seven other feelings. Mm-hmm. If you already know that you've been through disappointment and can handle it, and you've been through frustration and can handle it, and you've been through sadness and whatever, you can handle it, then go after the thing you want.
Yes. I love that. So I'm becoming really curious if there's anything else that we need to know about, you know, this really embracing of unpleasant feelings in our life.
Well, you and I talked ahead of this whole idea of emotional strength.
Yes.
So if you want to circle around to
that's it. And also I want you to really help us understand why is emotional strength so vital to being the person who can really make the impact and become more successful and achieve all those goals. Like, how does that tie together?
You know, you'll see one quite quickly. I really think it's that, again, when I think emotional strength, I might as well replace emotional strength with the word self-confidence. So it's that sense of we can go after things and we can handle it if it doesn't turn out the way we want. And so there's two. And it's really the essence of what allows us to kind of move through life a little easier, I think. So for me, it's my redefinition of emotional strength, and it has two parts to it. One is what I call feeling capable, and the second is being resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
Translate feeling capable into I can experience and move through the 8 unpleasant feelings. So capability, my belief is that a person doesn't feel fully capable in the world until they have the experience of themselves that they can experience and move through those 8 unpleasant feelings. It's like, I got it. So I know if I go pursue something and it doesn't turn out, I can handle the disappointment that follows, or I can handle the anger or sadness that follows, or frustration, whatever. So the capability allows me to go take risks and to, you know, to be on a date with somebody, to, you know, make a phone call, to get a speaking engagement, whatever it might be. The other part is being resourceful, and being resourceful has to do with feeling comfortable with the feeling of and the need for dependence and independence. So being alone and leaning on others. Because so many people get afraid to ask for help.
Yes.
So I see independence and dependence as both are crucial. We don't get to choose one or the other in life. And in fact, I think if we default to one, we eventually get bonked on the head to experience the other. And so that's just been my experience through the kind of course of my life. And so being resourceful then involves, again, that openness and willingness to be alone and to lean on others, which then allows us to acknowledge our needs and limitations. And that allows us to ask for help. And that puts asking for help squarely in emotional strength.
So I love that.
It should never be seen as a weakness. In fact, asking for help, if anything, just like crying, is not a sign of weakness. They're signs of humanness, not signs of weakness. So, and then the upshot is that I hope that people will then be open and willing to receive the help that they've asked for.
Yeah,
warmly receive it.
It is a two-part piece, you know, asking and then being willing to receive it, you know,
absolutely.
And they don't necessarily go hand in hand. And I do think that is a beautiful piece of this puzzle, is that, first of all, knowing that being vulnerable is a gift. It's something that opens you up to greater potentiality on this planet. Like it really opens you up for more. But to recognize that it's okay to ask for support, and that's part of being what resourceful mean, is a real paradigm shift, especially for a lot of leaders.
Yes.
So much they're accomplishing. And we can really become our own bottleneck when we get locked into, I have to figure this out. It's funny, I was just talking to someone who's a really powerful leader, and he was sharing how he gets locked into, I can figure this out on my own.
Mm.
And yet he's got an entire team of people who are there. And you know, he's coached with me, he's coached with others. And so I think this is a real pivot opportunity as you're listening in to really check in with yourself today and ask, how resourceful am I being really? You know, am I really tapping into the greatest level of resourcefulness? Am I getting stuck and needing to know how something's going to work? Or could I allow myself to be vulnerable and maybe even embarrass myself because I try something that doesn't work? Or can I really allow myself the gift of letting others help me get where I want to go? Like it's such a powerful shift for a lot of people.
I agree with you. Thank you for that. I mean, there's so many different things I can respond to with it. The one is that it's actually a compliment to others when you ask for help. Mm. Rarely do people see it as a burden. They almost always see it as a compliment. And in many cases, it allows them to show their own genius.
Yes.
So that if we're struggling with something and it's somebody else's zone of genius, let them shine, and that when they shine, you shine. You know, the other so interesting kind of paradox to me is if we take the analogy or the metaphor of one of the most obvious sign of, in quotes, strength would be a military. When most military, when militaries go out in a new area to go do something new, the first thing that they do is to assess for the places where they need help. They look for their limitations. They look for what they need, and then what do? They call in resources. So the most obvious symbol of strength actually is the best at asking for help.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I believe when you really awaken leadership, like when you truly, truly awaken the most resourceful and powerful and confident part of you as a leader, you are willing to ask for help at that level. And like, you're really clear what you can do and where your strengths are not.
Right.
And that becomes the opening to build a powerful team. Joan, we could go on forever. Like, we could have seven parts to this, I'm sure. And I know you have a very full plate today. I would love it if you could share, how could people find out more about you? You know, what would be a next step in learning more about what you're teaching us today?
Well, certainly, I speak and I coach. I do, elite coaching, and they can go to drjoanrosenberg.com. And if they want, the first major chapter of my Ease Your Anxiety book is a download. It's available for free. So I believe that's drjoanrosenberg.com/anxiety-reset. Or it's .com/anxiety-reset/.
Yeah. And we'll have those links for you in the show notes on themelaniebenson.com/blog. If you're listening to this on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Google Play or any of the other places that this podcast is live, we always post the links and all kinds of goodies from today and the show notes so that you can quickly catch up and pick up maybe some nuggets that you missed at melaniebenson.com/blog. So jump.
One more, if that's all right. The other is that certainly people want to watch the TED Talk. The TED Talk is on YouTube.
Yep.
So it's Emotional Mastery, The Gifted Wisdom of Unpleasant Feelings. And then I also have a podcast called The Mindstream Podcast, and that's on iTunes.
Yeah, and we will put, again, all those links for you. And by the way, if you just type in Dr. Joan Rosenberg in Google, the TED Talk is the first thing that pops up. So
got it. Okay, cool.
Very popular TED Talk. Joan, thanks so much for being here today and sharing this wisdom with us. I truly believe that in order to have a great impact in this world, sometimes we have to do the inner work to prepare ourselves to have that kind of reach and impact in them. And that, we have to become, I like the way you said, resourceful and strong in our emotional resilience. So thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks again, Molly, for having me. Loved it.
And thanks guys for being here today. We'll be back again next week with another Amplify Success episode. And be sure to head on over to the blog. Let me know, what was a good takeaway? What was an aha? What inspired you about today? I know both Joan and I would love to hear your comments. See you guys again next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Amplify Your Success podcast with your host, Melanie Benson. Want to get connected to other thought leaders and visionaries transforming the world? Join the free Amplify Your Success community at amplifyyoursuccesscommunity.com. And you can quickly find all the resources from today's episode on Melanie's blog at melaniebenson.com/blog. Just put today's episode number in the search bar. Now choose to get amplified today. See you next week.